Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of the Skype show. Today I'm joined by Alex Lewis, an MVP from Event Zero, and Uma Kabir, who's the product manager for Sonos Networks. Today, on today's show, we're going to be talking about enterprise voice, or start the topics on enterprise voice. I'm going to be talking about dialing in session one. Then Alex is going to be showing his UC Commander in session two. And then in session three, Uma is going to be presenting Sonos Cloud Link and where Sonos are up to with that product at the moment. You may notice that today we're trialing broadcast meeting Q&A. So if you have any questions in the broadcast, then please use that feature and we'll get back to you towards the end of the show in session four. So due to popular demand from the community, you've asked us to talk about enterprise voice, and it's quite a large topic to talk about in 20 minutes. So what I've decided to do is break it up into maybe three or four episodes of 20 minute topics. So in this show, we're going to be talking and covering dial plans and why we need them. Normalization rules, going to be touch a bit on them. And then we're going to be looking at the basic voice routing logic for Skype for Business to give you some context for the shows coming up in the future. So first of all, what is the definition of a dial plan? So if you have a look on TechNet, the statement from Microsoft is that a Link server or Skype for Business server dial plan is a named set of normalization rules that translate a number or numbers from a named location, individual user or contact object for the purpose of phone authorization and call routing. So in simple English, this means that the dial plan essentially allows you to make a call, and it's the first part of a call authorization. And without proper normalization, then any call to the PSTN is going to fail, or you're going to have significant problems with. So with any dial plan, there are three main elements. The first element is the dialing conferencing region. So when you specify a conferencing region here, it allows you to select the default or the preferred PSTN dialing number for users in that region. So when a user is enabled for enterprise voice and they go to Outlook and they create a new meeting, the number that is presented as the primary number in that Skype meeting invite is brought by through the conferencing service in through the dial plan and then onto your Outlook invite. External access prefix, and this is a number, this is a function going back to the old days of where you legacy PBXs, when you had to dial a specific number to reach an outside line. So if you remember, if you ever joined a company and you asked them, how do you make an external call? And they said you have to press 9 for an outside line. This is the external access prefix example. Personally, I don't like using this in Skype for Business or Link. It's an old feature, and people should just be able to dial the number they want in the least with the least effort possible. And also, if you're dialing an emergency number in the UK and you want to dial 999 and not 499 to reach the emergency services. The third element, and probably the most important element of a dial plan, is a set of normalization rules. So these take the number string entered by the caller and converts that into a standardized telephone format. And as everybody should be aware, that Skype for Business recognizes the E164 standard telephone number. So when you look at your voice routing control panel, you'll notice that when you create a new dial plan, you have three or four options. The global dial plan is the default dial plan, and you can't delete that. And any normalization rules that you have in there will take effect globally. So you can't delete the global dial plan, it must exist there, and you use that basically for any global numbers that you want to normalize outside a user dial plan. The pool dial plan, it can be assigned to either the Skype for Business registrar pool, the front end pool, or to a PSTN gateway. And the site is assigned to the Skype for Business site and not the Active Directory sites and services. So when you look into Apology and you see your Skype for Business sites defined, that's what the site is referring to. The user-based dial plan is the most granular dial plan, and you can create multiple user dial plans, whereas the pool and site, you can only create one dial plan per site or pool. So if you have different dialing habits for users, maybe you have some users in EMEA, some users in North America, maybe some in Asia Pacific, you can create user-based dial plans based on their calling habits and regional needs. So effects of dial plan, why it's so important. So when the user dials a number in the Skype client, if that number can't be matched in a normalization rule in a dial plan, then the call's going to fail. It's not going to be authorized. So even if you have an internal extension number range, even if you are calling an internal PBX system, you're going to have a normalization rule, even if you're not translating it in any way, shape, or form. As I said before, the dial plan affects both internal and external calls, so inbound and outbound. So if a number is getting presented to the Skype mediation server and it's not in E164 format, then if you haven't got a normalization rule to match, it's going to refuse a call. So you need to have the dial plans to match both ends. There is a precedence to how the dial plans are applied. So the first precedence, if a user is assigned a user-based dial plan, then that dial plan is enforced for that user. If you have a pool dial plan, that's enforced only on users who aren't assigned to a user dial plan. If you have a site dial plan, then that's assigned and enforced into a site. If that site, the users in those site don't have a user dial plan, or there isn't a pool dial plan covering that pool where the site is on. And if none of them apply, the global dial plan takes precedence to everything. Moving on to normalization rules, and I'm probably stealing a bit of thunder from Alex's friend and colleague, but we'll give it a go. Mr. Lasko is going to be arriving on the Skype show soon, so he can tell me off if I get these wrong. But normalization rules, in Skype, we use the .NET regex regular expressions to convert the input string into a standards-based E164 number. The reason why I say .NET regex is that the SBC, such as the Sonos suite, they tend to use the Linux-based regex, which is broadly similar, but there are a couple of differences between the two sort of expression languages. So the reason why we have the normalization rule to E164 is that so we can put that number into enum, which then creates your line URI or your SIP URI. So as you can see in that example in the red text, that's the normalization rule taking effect, and everything outside it is enum. And the reason why we have enum is to allow modern telephony systems such as Skype for Business, any other SIP-based telephony system, interoperate with old copper switch networks such as the PSTN. So that's why we need enum. And you can have more than one normalization rule per dial plan. So if you have a look at the screenshot in the slide, it's just a very basic rudimentary dial plan that it's not production ready. It's just some examples thrown in. So you can see there's a precedence in that table. So at the top, and the way that the matching is done, it's matched top to bottom. So if you have a normalization pattern that matches an on rule one, translation rule one, it won't go and go through any of the other normalization rules to find a match. So these normalization rules can be quite complex depending on what you're trying to do and what you're trying to normalize in these rules. But I'm a fan of keeping it simple where possible. So it depends on what you have. And like I say, Ken's got the Skype Optimizer, is it now? I think it is. Where you can go and practice out and actually put your production normalization rules in and it will spit out some PowerShell and it does most of the stuff for you, which is great. In terms of what you don't have to think about is a white space or dash characters or brackets. So when you do Skype for Business click to call and you see a number being presented on the website that might have the area code in brackets followed by the subscriber number, you don't have to match the brackets in that string. Skype is intelligent enough to automatically strip those out of the number before it hits your normalization rules, which makes it a bit simpler for us all. So digging a little bit deeper into normalization rules. So like I say, you can do simple rules in designed in the management interface in the control panel, or if you need more advanced rules, you can do it through PowerShell. So if you're not familiar with normalization rules, and there are a few things to consider. So a rule starts with the caret sign, which is the hat sign or the rooftop from my primary school days. And that denotes the start of the number string. So all the numbers that must take effect into this normalization rule must be to the right of this character. And at the end of the string, when you're done, you end it with the dollar sign. Anything between brackets, so it's considered a number group, and this can be referenced in translation rules using the dollar variable. So in this example here, if I have the open bracket 200, close bracket, and then 300 in brackets, we can reference that by $1, which will be the 200, and $2, which will be 300. And if you notice, the 1 and 2 relate to the groups of numbers in the way they appear left to right in the string. So Skype for Business requires sort of number groups. Anything outside these number groups is ignored in translation. So if you want to omit the leading zero, for instance, you would put this outside your first number group. So normalization rules, regex is class-based, keep calling it a language, but it's more of a mathematical formula. And you can have different classes of characters to represent alphanumeric, numeric values, etc. And the one that we're really interested in for Skype for Business is the D class. And this references a D matches any numeric value between the value of 0 and 9. The other part of normalization rules is we use ranges to define what number in the string, what range of number within the string to expect. So in the UK, if we have 011, 012, and 0123 as the start range of most of our subscriber numbers, apart from the large area codes such as London, which is 020. But here we can say that the first part of our group of numbers can be between 1 and 3. So we can use a number range being 1-3 to declare that the numbers that are going to be the number that's going to be in that position, it can only be those either 1, 2, or 3. It can't be 4 or 5, etc. So it's simply just declaring the D class won't actually fit the whole number string. So that we've got 11 digits in the phone number. And if we just do /D, that references just one digit in the rule. So we need to use repeaters. And there are several repeater functions in regex. So there's the star repeater. So if we specify the D class star, it means that the preceding character, so the number, it can be any number, can be repeated 0 to unlimited times. So while the D doesn't actually specify a 0 or 1 or 5 or 6, you can have basically any number string from 1 to infinity. Using the plus, we can actually nail that down a little bit more to say that, well, if we do a single plus preceding the D class, then we can repeat the number twice, or repeat number once rather, so we can have two instances of a number, of a numeric value. Or if we do two pluses instead of one, we can say it can be one or unlimited times. The curly brackets with the N and M values, meaning the least and most times, they're much more flexible, and we use these quite a lot in Skype for Business. So if the N means the least amount of times the preceding character can be repeated, and the M means the maximum. So in the example here, we've got a number group, and we're specifying that we're expecting a numeric digit, and we're expecting three repetitions of this digit. So we can, in this range, we can translate any four-digit number block, because the D class actually counts as one. If we want to do an optional match on a character, we can use the question mark after the digit that we're questioning whether it's going to be present or not. So if you're doing international dialing, some people might dial 00, some people might dial a single zero. We can actually question the use of double or single zero in one normalization rule. And it, as far as the rule is concerned, it will not really mind so much. So we can also use or statements. So this is done by using the pipe character. So this is where we can declare a block of numbers to the left and right of that character. So the number can be a range or a group or a regex. In this example here, we're expecting 1, 2, 3, or 4, 5, and 6. So it can't be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, etc. So blocks are quite interesting. So number blocks, they're in square brackets. And here we can put in our own normalization rules to target a substring of the called number, so we can make much more granular rules that match specific dialing habits. Translation. So this is where we've matched the numbers that we want to allow. And now we need to convert that number into E164 format. So what we need to do here is pre-append the plus character, and followed by your country code that's been dialed. So for the UK, it's 44, so that'll be plus 44. So regex will match the number groups, and then we can reference that with the dollar variable in the translation rule. So for example, if a client dials 01270212000, for instance, we're going to create a very simple pattern match for that to say that the zero is outside the number group, so we're not bothered about the zero, but it must start with a zero. And then we're expecting 9 or 10 digits, depending on the length of the area code and subscriber number. And then we're going to translate that into plus 44.1, which then translates into the full E164 format number, as you can see there in the green text. There are a couple of nuances with normalization rules. So I made this slide before the weekend, and I declared that input string starting with a plus. So if a user dials a number already with a plus icon, is considered E164 format, and then should skip normalization rules. But John Cook, I was trying to help him over the weekend, and he's found a way of getting normalization rules to actually take account of the plus, which I find a bit weird because it really shouldn't happen. But anyway, it seems to do for him, so we'll have to try it out on a lab. So another scenario that I've come across a lot with customers is the fact that they might have different branch sites around the UK. So they'll have the head office in one area code, and then maybe three or four other sites in three or four other area codes. And the dialing habits of the user means that they're used to dialing the local subscriber number and getting through to local businesses and contacts without having to dial the full area code and subscriber. So you can do this in dial plans and normalization rules to a point. So you can have a number user dial plan. So you can say that if the user is signed the dial plan for HQ, they're going to have, we can normalize any six digit subscriber number and attach or pre-append an area code to it. And the same for the branch sites. But if the mobile user, so if you have the director who wanders around, or a sales guy who wanders around these branch offices, and they used to dial in just the 6-digit numbers in there and that relevant area, then their user dial plan won't actually update to the one that's made for the branch sites, for instance. So here we've got a choice really of telling the user, well, it's tough, it only works in your main base. Admins to change the user dial plan every time the person moves, or we can use location-based routing in order to facilitate that a bit more dynamically, and we can accommodate internal users' mobility. But if you're signed in via Edge, we can't use location-based routing, and therefore you must use the full URI, full area code and subscriber. Not to dial plan specifically, but to normalization rules. So what I've also found is that we come from Link 2013, we had the company address book text file that we could put our normalization rules into to normalize our AD contacts. That's moved into PowerShell now. What I found is that if you somehow create a normalization rule in there, or duplicate, or two normalization rules rather, that can match the same string, you have some weird issues on the contact card of the in the Skype client, whereas if a mobile number is matched twice, it will actually show the mobile number formatted in both matches, normalization rules that are matched, which is kind of frustrating and gives you some weird uses. So just bear that in mind. One thing I haven't talked about is extensions. So here we define extensions by using the ext equals followed by extension number. So, and this must conform to a Lightning URI format in Skype for Business. So here we can see an example of a valid extension-based URI. So using the last 4 or 5 digits of the DDI number assigned to a user makes it life a bit easier for normalization rules. So we can simply say that if an extension rate, if a DDI finishes in 2100, we can create a normalization rule that will fit that 4-digit range block and translate it into the full line URI. So here we've got 212100, and you can see that the 2100 is matching the last 4 digits of the DDI. So if we add another user, their DDI might be 212101, which will be the extension number 2101. So this example normalization rule here will actually catch all them variations and format into the proper DDI and the extension number. So when your normalization rules are made for your internal extension, so you must mark them as an internal extension number, and this will avoid unnecessary requests going out to the PSTN. So for extensions that aren't a substring of the DDI, it's a bit more complicated. So here in the example, we've got a DDI ended in 2100, but we have an extension of 3000, which we can't globally normalize into any kind of conventional range. So here we have to create a normalization rule for every user who has this type of URI and DDI. So if you don't do that, then if the user, somebody dials an extension number, then the call is going to fail and we'll get some error messages in Snooper. Most of all, you'll see that the SIP error 485 ambiguous, which basically means that Skype can't actually find a unique number for this person. So I'm running over time, but so I'll skip through this quite quickly. So if number strings cannot be normalized, the call will fail because they're considered invalid and they will not have any root. So the user experience they'll see that here the failure tone by default. So you can improve the experience of this somewhat by adding a catch-all rule at the end of your normalization rules and forward that to maybe an unassigned number, which is tagged to an announcement service, which explains that this call is, you know, you're trying to call an incorrect number. It's better to do this on Skype rather than sending it out to the PSTN and offloading that to your ITSP. It's just, you've got an opportunity to correct it, and B, it will be taking up valuable connection and bandwidth. Moving on to some routing rules, so basic routing rules. So we have a dial plan, so that's the first part of authorization. Then we move on to voice policies, which is the second part of authorization. And then we come to routes and PSTN usages. So PSTN usages are attached to a voice policy, which allow you to, when you dial a number, to use specific or a group of routes to the PSTN. So as you can imagine, the gateways are assigned to routes. So, and the route must exist even for internal numbers of Skype for Business, but you just don't define a gateway. So the routing logic of Skype for Business is quite interesting. And if you can't make out the flow chart in this diagram, then the deck will be made available after this show. But essentially a call comes into Skype, it's first going to check if it's a SIP URI. So if it is a SIP URI, so we're matching SIP, you know, mark at theskypeshow.com, then we're going to go straight to reverse number lookup. If we find a user that's got that SIP address enabled on the Skype for Business installation, then we're going to try and attempt to call that person. If reverse number lookup fails, then we're going to ask if that user is a federated user and pass that on to Federation. And if neither of those options can be resolved, then the call will ultimately fail. So, and then if it's not a SIP URI, it's got to be a phone number. So it then checks whether that number you're dialing is an emergency number. So it picks up that up from your E911 location policy. So if it isn't determined to be an emergency number, it skips all the other normalization rules and goes straight to PSTN usages. So you want to make it a quick call to the emergency services. So onto PSTN usages and out through to your PSTN gateway or your ELIN gateway. If it's not an emergency number, then we're going to ask it whether it's a globally unique number. So is it already formatted into E164 format? If it's not, then we're going to go to dial plans. Is it in the dial plan? Can we resolve it, etc.? If we can resolve it in the end, it's going to go to reverse number lookup. It's then going to, I can't even see that one. If it's found, we're going to try and call that person. If it's not found, we're going to then go and look at the call park service and unassigned number. So if there is an unassigned number, then that will be played. If not, it's going to go out to the PSTN usages. If it finds a valid route, it'll go out to your trunk and out to the PSTN. If there's no valid route, it will fail. So that basically is a very high level walkthrough of how the routing logic in the voice stack of Skype for Business operates. So with that in mind, that concludes my session, and it's my pleasure to introduce Alex Lewis from Event Zero, who will be presenting UC Commander in session two.
Morning or afternoon, everyone, depending on kind of where you are in the world, or actually potentially middle of the night if you're over in Australia or the Asia part of the world with some of my colleagues. As Mark mentioned, I'm going to talk a little bit about UC Commander. We're going to try to keep it as technical as possible without doing a demo, but this is where I think testing out the new Q&A function is going to be really useful and interesting. So if there is any questions, go ahead and type them up now before you forget them, and then Mark's going to circle back for them back at the end. So some of the customers, people always ask, you know, kind of who's using it. Here's a list of reference customers, and to kind of answer the elephant in the room question is probably most of you are aware that Microsoft purchased a fair amount of our intellectual property back in December, January. So about 6 months ago, give or take. And what does that mean for Event Zero? In short, nothing changes. For us, we're still here supporting all of our customers, bringing on new customers, bug fixing the product, continuing to make everything better. Really, for all of us employed by Event Zero, it's kind of just another day. So if you have questions around that, maybe not the right forum for them here, but feel free to shoot me an email. I'm sure Mark's happy to share my contact info at the end of this if you'd like. So really, why would you build any sort of analytics? And I'll keep a lot of this very general to an analytics perspective as opposed to anything specific to Event Zero. The short of it is, what's been built into Link and Skype for Business for the last, almost 10 years has either been non-existent or very, very poor. We've all sat there with the default Link or Skype for Business monitoring report. You click, you go grab a cup of coffee, you come back, you hope the report's done, or you realize you clicked in the wrong spot, you got to go back, wait 10, 15 minutes. And then when you finally get the report, you look through it and go, what I wanted wasn't really here. So the way that we kind of approach this is a concept called mean time to innocence. So how quickly can I, as a Link administrator, look at a problem and say either, yes, this is absolutely my problem, I'm going to fix it and work on it, or you know what, this isn't my problem, this is the network team problem or the virtualization team's problem or someone else's problem, and get all the data I need very quickly to hand off to them so I can go back to working. Back when I did a lot of Skype deployments, one of the big things we always came across was spending half a day or multiple days at the end to just come back and go, oh yeah, that's not something I can fix at all. We really wanted to make that easier. I think that's the goal of kind of all of the IT Pro Tools vendors, is how do we make that process easier and less painful? One of the things that we think kind of makes us different, and one of the questions that we get a lot around is how quickly can we deploy the solution? Just to give you an example, we deployed for a company of about 40,000 on-prem users in about four and a half hours, start to finish. So it's really, really quick. Improving your analytics is not a huge time investment. You can go through and really do that super quickly, as well as people that say, hey, I want to try this out, but I don't have a whole lot. I don't have weeks to dedicate to a deployment. How do I do that? Super simple. Let's kind of get into the nuts and bolts of how UC Commander works. So really, people ask, do I need a whole bunch of probes? And this is something very specific to us. Do I need to have a whole bunch of SNMP MIBs going out to various network devices? The short answer is no. We offer UC Commander in basically two different flavors. You can run it in our cloud, which is data centers in the US, Europe, and Australia, which about 97, 98% of our customers do, or you can run it on-prem in your own data center, which 2 to 3% of our customers do, I think. Either way, it's the same. We'll treat UC Commander as an application platform, and they have connectors that talk to it. So what a connector is it's a very small agent that sits on your Link front ends, your edges, your mediation servers, and it sits there and watches everything that's going on. It collects a ton of data. We collect, I believe, around 5 times as much data as is collected in the monitoring reports natively. So grabs tons of data, pushes it to the UC Commander application wherever it lives. And I guess I forgot, there's also one agent that monitors your SQL database, and that can either run on SQL in smaller deployments or on a dedicated system or on your witness to read SQL information. And that'll, between the two of those, you'll get everything from real-time data to historical data, as well as aggregation of everything from key health indicators to real-time performance, historical performance, correlation. So we can look at something and say, oh, hey, you know what? 97% of the people with this model headset and this laptop together are having a bad experience. That could be anything from, hey, you know what, I've had a bad USB driver on that machine, or maybe there's something up with a bad batch of headsets that you got from one of your vendors, or maybe it's potentially a bad batch of phones. One thing that we see a lot kind of running through it is people that have especially older iPhones or older mobile phones, and they go forward and try to make a phone call, and the phone call is horrible, and they say, oh, well, the mobile client's bad. And then you go back and look through it, and you see, oh, well, the mobile client wasn't actually bad. There was insufficient CPU available to transcode audio or video or desktop sharing or whatever they were trying to do. And that's usually because Angry Birds or something else is sitting in the background, Clash of Clans, eating up all that CPU. And then when your Skype call came in, you just clicked OK, and your less than currently up-to-date phone doesn't know what to do with it in terms of how to prioritize it, and the quality suffers overall. We can see all of that information. Maybe your dog chewed on your headset a little bit, and it killed the noise-canceling mic, or we can see a ton of echo. You can see all of that kind of echo, howl rate, etc., in the tool as well. Getting a little bit kind of off track of how it works, but the connectors, all they really need is port 443 outbound from the connectors to either the application server or to our cloud to start working. So super firewall friendly, doesn't require anything inbound. As much as these arrows say both directions, the session is always initiated from the internal network or from the DMZ out to the application server. So really, really simple to deploy. A lot of times firewall teams won't even know it's there if there's already 443 outbound to those servers for things like checking CRLs or CRLs, et cetera. There's a bunch of different modules inside UC Commander. Those of you that have been following Event Zero for a long time, remember when we launched, the product was just called Dossier. Over time, we built a lot of different modules and different things. And with that, we changed the name of the product to UC Commander. So the whole overlying platform is called UC Commander, and Dossier is essentially the analytics suite. We have Dossier for Enterprise Voice, Dossier for conferencing, Dossier for devices, Dossier for IM, and Dossier for response groups. So you can really go through and kind of pick and choose what's important to you. If you're really focused on voice, you may only want the voice module. You're really focused on adoption, collaboration metrics, you may want the IM module. If you're only using this for conferencing, you may want the conferencing module, but everything's kind of available a la carte. And you can also go through and limit different access to different people. So maybe I want to give Mark access to all of our conferencing metrics, but I want to give Joe over here access to only the IM metrics or something else. I can do that through RBAC roles. The product. KHI, this is probably an area where I get the most questions. What is KHI? It stands for Key Health Indicators. And Microsoft came up with a spec of about 70 or 72 key health indicators. And they have a white paper that you can go out and read if you have trouble sleeping. It's really, really dry. The short of it is we've implemented all of these and organized them according to the same Microsoft set of Ring 0, Ring 1, Ring 2, et cetera, in terms of importance. So not only can you see what all of your key health indicators are for a given call, on a given server, and watch that over time. So to see, hey, 9 a.m. every day, my disk subsystem gets thrashed and performance suffers because it takes people a long time to join meetings. I can also, through this, roll this all the way back up into Dossier. So when I look at call quality for a given call, I can see if that call had any problems, what else was going on in the server environment or the virtualization environment that makes that really, really interesting. So maybe, normally the problem is, my link servers looked fine, and you go point at the network team. And the network team, well, our network was fine. A lot of times you can see either very short-term or transient problems in a virtualization environment that you may not show up anywhere else. So we can actually float those up back into the call and say, hey, you know what? Maybe there was a CPU, insufficient CPU issue or disk issue, and we can see not only did that affect this call, but affected, 30% of the calls that were going on at the same time, or 30% of the conferences that were going on at the same time. Really interesting to see if one, am I having one problem, or am I having a pervasive problem that I really need to look at in a different way? Because nobody likes spending, 2 or 3 hours on that one person's problem, only to find out that 50 other people are having that same problem, and you could have solved it earlier if you had known that. Range Manager is kind of moving out of the Dossier suite a little bit. We internally call it better than a spreadsheet. We all use spreadsheets, with a couple exceptions. Most of us use spreadsheets to manage DIDs. This is a tool that connects into Active Directory and into Link or Skype for Business to grab all the information and not only tell you how many DIDs out of any given range you're using, how many are available. Via PowerShell, it can give you the next available DID, so it can really automate your DID provisioning process. It'll also connect up with the dossier suite so that if I see, hey, you know what, I've got this number here, and that number corresponds to, say, Ken Lasko, and I don't know, why is Ken ordering pizza every night? I can see all of that information here, both in terms of, you know, him being allocated to the number and then connecting that out to any numbers that he's dialing, the quality of those calls, et cetera. So it really is an integral part of the overall product. The other easy way is if you're like me, back when, before I started consulting, I had a DID spreadsheet that was about 16 gig, which means every morning when I came in, I would power up my PC, I'd start 64-bit Office, and then I'd try to open this file. And then I'd go get coffee, I'd walk around the office, talk to everyone, maybe go grab a bagel, and come back, and I'd still have to wait 10 or 15 minutes for the spreadsheet to open. Not a great experience. This is all instantaneous. So we've got customers with over 100,000 DIDs. As soon as you click the button, they're all available to you. So there's no waiting, there's no just hanging out, hoping the Excel spreadsheet opens, or hoping that, you know, somebody updated it, because that's something else that tends not to happen. Nobody ever updates the spreadsheet correctly. So you give someone a number and then Link screams at you saying, ah, that number's already allocated to someone. We can manage all of that here, because as soon as you allocate a number to someone, it'll pop up in their Active Directory properties, and we'll grab it within just a couple minutes. So you'll see it pop up there live. Polycom provisioning, this is something that we co-developed with Polycom. Really exciting, really fun. If you've ever had to deploy a VVX phone on your own, it's a very painful experience. None of us like it. None of us enjoy it. It's one of those things you just have to do. In fact, Polycom IT is actually one of our largest reference customers, because even they didn't want to do it manually. This really is a graphical user interface to be able to provision your Polycom VVXs, sound points, trios, sound structure, little golf balls that hang from the ceiling, in a way that is super easy using something called microconfigs. So instead of having to look at that 3,000 line XML file and then try to figure out what everything means, you can just search for, hey, I want to do, I don't know, acoustic fence, or hey, I've got all 10,000 phones that I ordered, but they shipped with the standard OpenSIP firmware, or excuse me, OpenSIP profile. I need to convert them all over to the Link profile and then do a handful of configurations. All that stuff is instantaneous. We can also do things like zero-touch provisioning. So how we do that is using DHCP option 160 and 161. We'll go through, and as soon as your phone boots, it'll look for 160 or 161, kind of depending on what profile is on the phone at the moment. It'll find the provisioning server. If it needs to switch profiles, it'll do that reboot. And if it doesn't, it'll just say, hey, what config do you have for me? And configs can be applied at the phone, individual phone level, the site level, a group level, that's arbitrary groups you define, AD groups based on the signed in user, or global configs, or we have configs for things that are unprovisioned. So if you're kind of a shadow IT organization, and you have people that randomly buy a whole bunch of stuff on Amazon or Walmart or eBay or whatever, and then just plug it into your network and you want to be able to manage that, what we can do is if someone plugs in an unauthorized phone, you can pop up a message that says, IT has not provisioned this phone. Please contact IT at 555-1212. And as soon as they call in for provision, you go, oh, hey, that's not one of my phones. Where'd you get that phone? Makes for a pretty fun conversation. We can also do kind of the opposite of that, which is zero-touch provisioning. So you're rolling into an office. You really don't want to send, I don't know, a whole bunch of IT people there. But you've got people that you know, are going to put a phone on a desk, you know, put a keyboard on a desk, put a monitor on a desk. With zero-touch provision, all they do is plug it in, and then as soon as the phone's plugged in and booted up, it'll pull the right config, and then when the user comes in that next day, all they need to do is log in, and the phone is theirs. So really, really simple. Probably the thing that I like the most, but is probably the most boring, is log management. So you can see all of our all the log files on the phone get uploaded to the UCC server. So that means if a phone goes offline, or you need to grab a log file, or you need to do kind of anything, you can grab the latest log files right there in a zip file, ship them off to Polycom, take a look at them, internally if you want. Makes it super, super easy than if you've ever had to try to call a user and walk them through the process to send log files and then go to your TFTP server and search for where they are. And it's just a huge pain. So it makes that process just transparent. And the less we can bug the user and frustrate them more, really, really helpful. We can deal with that all kind of on the back end as an admin. In terms of scale, rolling out 50 Polycom phones, you can generally do by hand. When you start talking about rolling out 500, 1,000, 10,000, 50,000 phones, you really start to get into problems where you need teams and teams of people to manage the phones. And I'm sure anyone here who's been in IT knows that you can't just go back to IT and say, I know we're rolling out a whole bunch of Skype phones, so I need like a team of 20 people for the global rollout. You just get laughed out of the room. So with a team of one or two people, you can do a global rollout of tens of thousands of phones very, very easy, very simply, and really make that process easy. I don't know if some of you have seen, I know Mark mentioned Ken Lasko. Ken works for Event Zero, and he's done a lot of cool videos you might see on YouTube. He's done one video for Polycom Provisioning, and it's basically his boss calling and saying, hey, I need to do 10,000 phones. I need you to roll them out right now. Oh, sorry, boss, that's going to take like 3 weeks. And while he's on the phone with his boss, he does the whole provisioning, hits reboot, all the phones reboot, pull up their new config. And he calls up his buddy and says, hey, we're going to Vegas. We got 3 weeks off. It really is that simple. If you haven't seen the video, go check it out. It's a good mix of technically how to use the product and some comedy. But really, it just makes that whole process very, very simple. Also allows you to do things like reporting. So if you push, a new firmware to a phone, or maybe a new firmware to a site of phones with 1,000 phones, kind of the first question that everyone's going to ask is, well, okay, that means all the phones are on the new firmware, right? And you kind of go, I guess so. We've got a reporting engine attached to this, the same reporting engine as the rest of EC Commander, that you can actually go in and do a report. What are all the phones with different than expected firmware? So I can go through and look and say, oh, you know what? These two phones didn't get the firmware because they've been offline. Maybe somebody unplugged them. Or, I don't know, this guy was on a 3-day conference call. Maybe that's fraud. Maybe he forgot to hang it up. There's all sorts of issues of why it wouldn't have taken it. But you can get an easy report and then go out and troubleshoot just the ones that are having issues, which, as simple as it sounds, is something that's not available without this tool in any way. So really makes it powerful and easy, especially with a small team, to roll out a large number of phones. With that, I think I may have made up for Mark's time a little bit. I think I'm about 2 minutes early. I'll hand over to Umar Kabir from Sonus to talk about CCE and some of the cool stuff they're doing. Umar?
Hello, everyone. All right, so why don't I get started? So my name is Umar Kabir. As Mark and Alex had mentioned, I'm a product manager here at Sonus Networks. And my area of responsibility happens to be product management associated with the SBC 1000 and the SBC 2000. Just wanted to spend a couple of minutes with you going over the recent announcement that we made with regards to that product set surrounding the Cloud Link and specifically the CCE or Cloud Connector Edition software coming from Microsoft. Just some typical preamble. So what we wanted to say here, well, let's first start off from the basics. So Cloud Link is a marketing term, I guess you could say, that we recently announced specifically alongside the CCE. And what we wanted to do was just to be able to put a name beside all of the investment and the development that we happen to be undertaking here at Sonus in support of Cloud PBX. Okay, so when you hear the term Sonus Cloud Link, especially associated with Skype for Business, that's really the meaning of that term. It's the product set that Sonus happens to be bringing to market in order to support the transition of Skype for Business Enterprise Voice from on-premise to cloud PBX or in the cloud. Now, specifically, how does this relate to CCE? I'm not going to walk through the details of what CCE happens to be. My assumption is that the audience is already quite familiar. And I know that Mark has put out some pretty good articles surrounding the topic, which, you know, I would encourage you to go through. I found them very enlightening. I did want to say just a brief couple of comments surrounding the CCE. Well, why would someone want to be deploying the CCE to begin with? In support of Cloud PBX, given that Cloud PBX has support for PSTN calling. Now, as described here in the definition, it's an offering that implements on-premise PSTN connectivity in support of Cloud PBX. So why would you want to do that? And there's really three reasons that Microsoft has gone through. One reason is that in certain jurisdictions, actually many jurisdictions, when you're talking about outside the United States, the ability to make PSTN calls from the cloud is not available yet from Microsoft. So there, definitely you're going to need to have support for on-premise PSTN calling if you're going to be placing calls from Cloud PBX into the PSTN. Now, there's a couple of other subtle reasons as well why someone might want to look at deploying the Cloud Connector Edition, even when you happen to have access to PSTN through Cloud PBX. One reason is that enterprises may find it difficult for one reason or another to break their existing contracts with their service providers. Now, in that situation, you know, maybe you have a year or maybe you have 2 years still left on your contract. And to break that contract, you're just simply going to result in a cost that's unbearable. In that situation, the CCE, the Cloud Connector Edition, then becomes invaluable. And another reason why an enterprise might look at deploying Cloud Connector Edition may also relate to a degree of discomfort that the enterprise may have in going with PSTN access from the cloud through Microsoft. One reason may be that the pricing associated with the PSTN access from Microsoft may be a little bit higher than the enterprise is willing to bear. Or another reason might be that the enterprise may be reluctant to provide their PSTN access, outsource that to Microsoft. They would like to, for one reason or another, like to be able to manage that in-house. Either way, the CCE then becomes the perfect solution. Now, what Sonus did early in April, along with the Microsoft announcement of the availability of the Cloud Connector Edition, Sonus announced at that time Cloud Link support of the CCE to demonstrate to the marketplace, you know, that we're undertaking investments in this area and we fully support the transition of voice services to the cloud as part of Cloud PBX. And what you can see there is, you know, that support transcends the entire SBC portfolio at Sonus. The products that I specifically manage, the SBC 1000 and the SBC 2000, they happen to be the SBCs that we target specifically at branch sites and small headquarters. But we have sister products like the SBC 5000, the SBC 7000, that scale all the way up to 150,000 simultaneous sessions, which would be appropriate for very large enterprise or even service provider environments. And then we also have our virtual SBC solution that we call our SBC suite, which also partakes in the support of the CCE. And we'll get into that in a moment. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the deployment scenarios of CCE. On the left, originally I had this set up as animations, but we just had a little bit of difficulty being able to show you these slides in animation mode. So I'll try and walk through the animation anyway. On the left, what you have is a one mode of deploying CCE, which is that the CCE software, the Cloud Connector Edition software coming from Microsoft, is deployed by the enterprise on their own servers in their data center, in their generally available servers on their Hyper-V virtual machines. Okay? And what you could do is deploy alongside the CCE according to the instructions that Microsoft has identified on their CCE recipe page. You can deploy redundant gateways or redundant SBCs to be able to provide the interface to either legacy endpoints within the office itself or to get access into the PSTN. So that's what we mean here by point number two over to the left, is that you can take any qualified SBC from Sonus and deploy it alongside the CCE in order to get access to the PSTN. And that set of solutions is not confined specifically just to the SBC 1000, 2000. You can look at, depending upon your requirements for high availability or your requirements surrounding capacity, it might make sense to go with a virtual solution from Sonus, or it might make sense to go with some of the higher capacity SBC solutions. Either way, any of those solutions are available to you, and you would just click on that embedded link that you will see in the deck that we send after this call is over. You can use any one of those solutions to accomplish that goal. Now let's move over to the right. Now another possible deployment scheme is where an enterprise looks to acquire an integrated appliance, which happens to include not only the SBC slash gateway functions, but also includes within it the processing complex to execute the CCE itself. Okay? Now, as part of our announcement back in the April timeframe, we're looking to bring such an integrated appliance based on our SBC 1000 and our SBC 2000 platform. We are looking to bring that appliance to market a little later this year. Now, I have a timeframe of the second half of calendar year 2016. Over the next month or so, we'll be in a position to provide a little more specifics surrounding exactly when, within the second half of this year, we will be bringing that product to market. So I have here a slide that just talks about the SBC 1000 and the SBC 2000 at large. It talks a little bit about, you know, the kind of interfaces that you can expect on both devices, the quantity of sessions that can be supported. You know, 160 simultaneous sessions on the SBC 1000, any combination of IP to TDM slash FXX or IP to IP. And with respect to the SBC 2000, we're looking at a device that can scale up to 16 PRI, 48 FXS, and up to 600 IP to IP sessions, okay? Or any combination of calls up to the 600 number. I put down the typical three problems that our devices happen to resolve, or happen to address. So just giving a little bit of a brief introduction to the SBC 1000, 2000, in case anyone on the call is not familiar with the product. These are independently tested. They are Skype for Business qualified SBCs, Skype for Business qualified gateways, and soon to be, in a month or so from now, Skype for Business SBA qualified as well, and independently tested award-winning devices. So I've included links to the product pages on our public website for both products. You know, feel free to check the products out. Now, moving on to the next slide, let's talk about specifically the integrated appliance based on the SBC 1000-2000 that we intend to deliver into the marketplace in the second half of this year. The SBC 1000-2000, when you acquire it today, you can acquire it with an embedded single board computer. And that embedded single board computer happens to house the survivable branch appliance software from Microsoft in support of on-premise Skype deployments for branch offices where you're looking to have some survivability in the event that you lose your connection to your data center housed Skype for Business server. Now, what we're going to be doing is that we are going to be revving that embedded single board computer specifically to address the processing requirements associated with the CCE. If you've gone onto the CCE website, there's a list of requirements or recommendations that Microsoft makes surrounding the processing requirements, the RAM requirements, the hard drive requirements, so on and so forth, to be able to properly support the CCE for a capacity up to 500 simultaneous calls. We will be revving that embedded single board computer to be able to account for those requirements. Now, specifically, the number of calls that will be supported, the CPU which we'll be embedding in the device, the RAM, so on and so forth, all of those details will be forthcoming, and we'll be announcing those details over the next few months. But we will be making substantial changes to that embedded single board computer, where it will feature, you know, state-of-the-art server class CPU and memory. And furthermore, it's going to have a much larger hard drive. This is going to be an SSD hard drive. You know, it's really going to result in a very positive execution experience on behalf of the enterprise. And I include in our second major bullet there, builds on the existing advantages. That just calls out some of the things that we like to highlight as being the distinguishing features of the SBC 1000-2000 as it relates to competitive devices. So for example, on the SBC 2000, we're able to scale up to 16 PRI ports. You know, to find a device that happens to scale all the way to 16 PRI ports and at the same time be able to support up to 600 sessions, all of which could be IP to IP, we call that out as a differentiator. The same thing is also true with respect to the SBC 1000, where we are able to populate up to 24 FXS ports alongside two PRI. There's the ease of use, the secure architecture, so on and so forth. I do want to be sensitive to time, so I only have a couple more slides to go through, and then I'll turn it over to Mark. A couple of other things which I just wanted to mention with regards to the products which will be introduced into the marketplace, you know, coincident with the availability of CCE. On the SBC 1000 over to the left, we're going to be providing more FXS and FXO options to better address some of the footprint requirements or port requirements that customers may have. We're going to also be streamlining and expanding our ISDN port options as well. So we're looking at doubling the number of PRI ports in the SBC 1000, for example. And then applicable to both products, you know, when you're talking about deployment scenarios outside of CCE, so you're talking about an on-premise deployment. In those kind of cases where you're looking for a survivable branch appliance, when we go to market in the October timeframe, we're also going to be introducing Hyper-V virtual machine support for third-party applications. You know, we've heard that message loud and clear from the marketplace that there's a suggestion to be able to host third-party applications on the embedded single board computer, and we'll have that support available later this year. Over and above that, with the Skype for Business SBA, on the SBC 1000, we'll be able to support up to 1,000 users, beyond the current capacity of our SBC 1000 SBA available today. And we'll also have support for IPv6. And my last slide is just a quick shout out to Alex and the rest of the Event Zero team. We now also have the ability to house the connector applet on the SBC 1000s and the SBC 2000s, which feature our survivable branch appliance. And so that way, when you happen to deploy the SBC 1000, 2000 with SBA and with those connectors activated, you'll be able to get some key health indicators from the SBAs made available to you within the Event Zero UC Commander application. And thereby you'll be able to get some sense of what's happening to calls that are running through the SBA. Are there any inductions which you might be able to make with regards to performance and what's happening with the platforms, so on and so forth. So that's a shout out to Alex and the rest of the Event Zero team. We're really excited about having that available now. And feel free to contact your Sana sales manager or Alex at Event Zero to get more information. And with that, I will turn it over to Mark.
Thanks, Uma. Thanks, Alex. Just take back over. So the next show, before we move into questions and answer time, will be on the Wednesday, the 6th of July, because it was supposed to be Monday, the 4th, but apparently the US are celebrating some kind of national holiday then. But 7 p.m. normal time, and we have Stally Hansen coming on the show to talk about the call quality methodology, which should be quite interesting. So some community announcements as well. So if you're based in the UK, if you've not been sleeping under a rock for the last 12 months, then you'll be aware of UC Day, which is run by an MVP, Andrew Price, and a few other of his co-buddies. And this year's session submission is now open. So if you head on over to the UC Day website, you'd be able to submit your sessions if you fancy taking a session in that day. Andrew's also launching the Microsoft Cloud User Group, which is going to be presented at Microsoft's offices in Paddington, London. So he's going to be covering lots of Office 365 Azure type content, and that kicks off on the 13th of July. So, and he's got some key really well-experienced guest speakers in names of Ed Baker, Graham Hoskins, and he's also got Yale Lincoln as a vendor. So head on over to the MSCUG.com website for more information there. So now it's time for any questions that you may have. Like I said, we're using the broadcast Q&A function, which is in tech preview at the moment. Depending on your screen resolution, the Q&A functionality may be to your right of your the main screen, or more than likely be in the bottom. So you might have to scroll down. So we'll be both Uma, Alex, and myself will be around for the next sort of 5-10 minutes for any questions that you might have. So guys, while we're waiting for any questions from the community, I have maybe a couple of questions for both of you on the Sonus integration with Event Zero and UC Commander. So first, probably question to you, Uma. I'm guessing, is there going to be any sort of license implications from the Sonus perspective side of things for the SBA agent, or is that going to be just offloaded to Event Zero?
There is no license implications from the Sonus side. Really, what we had done on the SBC 1000-2000 SBA module is allow for the UC connector applet to run within what we call appliance mode. Typically, whenever third-party application software happens to be activated, you know, downloaded and deployed onto the SBA module, that embedded single board computer, what that does is that triggers something that we call running the SBA in server mode. And as a result of doing that, that becomes an unsanctioned configuration. So what Sonus typically does is that, you know, we advise the enterprise in question that particular configuration is going to be, or the software operating in that kind of configuration on the embedded single board computer is not directly supported, because, you know, that's really a configuration that the end customer, the end enterprise, happens to be setting up on their own. Sure. But in the case with respect to the integration that we've undertaken with Event Zero, you can deploy that connector onto the SBA module. We will completely support that without issue.
Cool. So I guess that just requires an additional port allowance outside to 443 if we're using the Event Zero cloud.
That is correct. I believe that's the configuration setup required in order to be able to support that. And we have, you know, our product pages listing exactly what you need to do to download the software, apply it, and then run it correctly.
Cool. I suppose the next logical question really is, since you're taking that step to support the SBA, what's the harm in taking it forward to actually support the SBC for UC Commander for analytics and call quality? Is that something you're going to be working on?
So I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Yeah, so is there any development in the pipeline whereby we can use UC Commander to have a look at the SBC side of the appliance to see what the SBC is doing? Because obviously we have call quality coverage up to the mediation, but then we have to rely on the gateway, a set of tools to define whether there's any quality issues on the PSTN side. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it certainly does. At the moment, this is not something that we have been discussing with Event Zero, but it's certainly something that we can look forward to possibly doing. That would require, I believe, some support on the part of Event Zero, but it's certainly something that we would be willing to discuss.
Okay. Okay, there were no questions from the community on this episode. So with that in mind, it's time to end the show. And I want to take this opportunity personally to thank Alex and Uma for their time and efforts in coming on to present to us all. And thank you for watching. Looking at the statistics at the moment, we've got about 30 people watching, so which is a very good number. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate the opportunity.
No problem.